The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt Boone
Media Productions. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
And welcome to another episode of Why It Ended. Robbie E., how are you doing today?
I am doing good, but it's hard for me to have a conversation with you nowadays without thinking of chocolatey, silky voice. It's just all I hear when I speak to you. It's all I've been thinking about all week. So thanks for that.
Well, special shout out to our man Nick Houseman with WrestleZone for giving us nightmares with that chocolatey voice.
And yeah, I'm going to bring it up every week. It's like a thing. This has lasted forever. Like the chocolate silky. Oh my God.
And you're doing a lot of press. You're doing a lot of interviews. And we'd like to give a special shout out to all the fans there who've been interacting with the show. The show is blowing up. And especially because of our guest last week, Mark Capani, Muhammad Hassan, just brought an amazing story to us. What did you think about the show last week, Robbie?
I thought it was awesome. And, you know, we keep saying like, oh, we don't think this week's going to top the next week. And it does. But you know what I've realized? Every week is just going to be equally amazing because everyone's story is so different. And that the talents that we're selecting to be on our show are just guys that have these different crazy stories. So every week, it's not about topping, you know, the previous week. I think it's just every week is just going to be a 10 as far as how good the story is.
I just have one question about last week's show because I got a lot of tweets about it. Muhammad Hassan had somebody with him. His first name is Sean. How do you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, you know what? I was going to interrupt you during that. And like literally, if we were in person next to each other, I would have flicked you on the forehead because it's Davari. I really was like, is he? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong here? But I know the guy. I call him Davari.
I think I called him Divari. Most of the time I called him Diviri or Davari.
Yeah, Diviri was the one. No, but all kidding aside, man, like we, throughout all the positive feedback you get on Twitter and Instagram and the reviews we're getting on all the iTunes and everything, you always get a few negative ones. And I have not seen one negative remark about this podcast. Everyone is loving it. And I can't thank everybody out there enough.
And I can't thank you enough, Robbie, for bringing this idea to me and letting me be a part of this awesome show. People are saying, over and over again, it's so nice to have something different. And also saying, we're really glad to hear from these guys again. And one of these people I personally am really glad to hear from, we're going to hear from in a little bit. He is Wildcat Chris Harris.
Yeah, Wildcat Chris Harris is on the show today. And it's one that I'm actually a little more excited about because not only am I excited for his story, but I know him. And he's a really good guy. And again, the cool thing about this is why it ended. Yeah, we're hearing why these guys, you know, had their careers cut short, but they're all in happy places now. And I'm hoping that it gets them some more appearances or some convention bookings and just lets people remember them, you know. And I'm hoping today that Chris gets that. You know, he deserves more Twitter followers. He deserves more bookings. He deserves a better spot in people's mind when they think of, you know, him in professional wrestling, because he is he left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth based on, you know, pretty much the last time you had seen him on TV. But he had such a great career before that. So,
and I'm really fascinated to hear it because there was no doubt in my mind, Cowboy James Storm is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. But Wildcat Chris Harris was the Shawn Michaels of that team. And he had a lot of hype. He was signed by the WWE. And then something happened and it ended. And coming after this, we're going to be with Wildcat Chris Harris and find out why it ended. Don't forget to support Robbie at all of his appearances and matches when you can. And to stay current on that, go to robbie-e.com. And also follow all of his Dad Bod Destroyer adventures on his Twitter and also at muscleandfitness.com. And our guest, Wildcat Chris Harris, is reuniting with the Cowboy James Storm in a tag team match Saturday, April 17th, 2018 at Malabar Gymnasium in Mansfield, Ohio at the Better Than You event. That's right, folks, an AMW reunion. Cowboy James Storm and Wildcat Chris Harris together again Saturday, April 7th, 2018. Go to www.aswalive.com for details. And if you're the kind of person that likes to read wrestling books, you will not find a better choice than Backseat in the House, your backstage pass through my WWE journey by Justin Roberts. Now, the ebook is going on sale April 1st, and it's going to be available for that day only for 99 cents. That is not an April Fool's joke. You can go to thejustinrobertsbook.com, or you can even use Amazon if it's easier. Best Seat in the House, your backstage pass through my WWE journey. The ebook goes on sale April 1st, and for one day, 99 cents. And now to our interview. Robbie, we are thrilled to have with us someone I have been watching for a long time, Wildcat Chris Harris. Chris, thank you for joining us, and how are you doing today?
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm doing great.
Hey, Chris, bro, I just wanted to say I appreciate you doing this. I've known you super long, and we're both excited to have you on as our guest, man.
It's funny. Everybody knows your story when they can turn it on every week and watch it on TV, but then once you're off the radar, people kind of they start wondering after that.
Well, and that is pro wrestling. You're right. That sums up pro wrestling.
Hey, man, we all either have been through it or are going to go through it. So, I mean, that's the way it is.
And that's our show, too. And in our show, we like to take you back to the very beginning. And, Chris, when did you first discover professional wrestling?
Saturday morning, right in front of the TV. The wrestling was on Saturday mornings, and I fell in love with it. It was just bigger than life, and I saw these superheroes on TV doing their thing, and it was just something I really loved.
Chris, did you have a certain like hero or someone you loved to watch on TV when you were younger?
My first hero was Randy Savage.
What was it about Randy?
I don't know. I guess he took it a step even further. When I talk about these being superheroes, you know, he came out all flamboyant and with the promos he did, it was just. He was not just a normal wrestler. He was someone, took it a step further. And I was mesmerized when I saw him. And of course, I always thought he was a great wrestler and great entertainer as well.
Yeah, he's one of the only wrestlers, I think out of anyone that I didn't get a chance to ever meet. Did you ever meet him?
I met him one time. It was actually in TNA. And I met him one time. And I shook his hand, and I became a little kid again. It was one of those kind of deals.
How did you get involved in professional wrestling? Where do you go? Who trained you? Who did you talk to?
There was a training center called the Monster Factory.
Sure.
Yeah, but you're talking about the one in New Jersey?
I think the original one was in New Jersey. It was ran by three guys. And then once they split off, one of them was in Marion, Ohio, which was Charlie Fulton. Because they had some, obviously had a great reputation, some good quality training. And I went up there, did a tryout, told them I was going to save my money and I was serious. And I saved for an entire year to make my way up there beginning in 94. And I trained that entire year of 94 up there in Marion, Ohio by Charlie Fulton.
And like when you say you went to a tryout, what does a tryout back then consist of? Like, what is that?
I don't want to say they beat the hell out of you. I know a lot of guys.
They put you through hell, though.
They put you through hell. You bump your ass off and see if you can take that. They'll put you in some holds and stretch you a little bit. I have never had anybody to break my nose or break my leg or anything like that, like some stories. But it was still pretty grueling. And I think they wanted to see if anybody that went through that would come back.
So everybody knows you, of course, with your success with TNA and later with the WWE, but you actually got your break in WCW. A lot of people don't know you played a fake Sting at one point, and you were also part of the R&B security towards the end of WCW. How did you get in touch with the WCW folks?
I think this is kind of in the middle of when there was a few territories still around. There was a few cities that still were big in wrestling, but Nashville still had a really good reputation with wrestling. They still had TV going on. And so I went down there and got hooked up with Bert Prentice and started working down here. And Bert had his contacts, and his main contact was Terry Taylor. who at the time was with WCW. So we're, you know, within a year or two of it closing down. And the R&B come from Russo and Bischoff, although we renamed it Run and Bump Security.
That actually makes sense by what I remember.
At some point, WCW closed down. How did you feel, especially when it looked like you were going to be the only breakout person from this R&B security?
Oh, man. Yeah, you finally get to that point after all, you know, all the years of watching it and then struggling to get it. You know, at the time, it's just you wanted to make it to one of the big two. So, yeah, things I was excited about it. Then they stopped bringing in the security. And then, you know, the worldwide, I think, got shut down. The Saturday night got shut down. And, you know, they were barely hanging on to Nitro and Thunder. But I think my contract, I'm going to guess April is when I got the call saying that my contract ended.
So how long were you actually contracted?
From October until, I'm going to guess April. So, maybe 6-7 months I was under contract. But yeah, it was a huge disappointment, man. I mean, I think I got paid for a few months after that, but it was just kind of back to the drawing board. You know, you have to go back to the beginning, and it was a letdown for a lot of the guys losing their jobs, but especially for me, thinking, you know, I finally broke through that glass ceiling, and I finally caught some notice of some guys. But you know, that's like Robbie was saying earlier, that's another thing that's part of wrestling. You know, you one day you think you're on top, and the next day the rug's jerked out from under you.
Well, it I'm sure it was, because it took you about a year and a half until June 1st, 2002, where you were given a tryout match against James Storm with Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. Can you talk a little bit about that tryout and maybe talk a little bit about James Storm?
We had a few matches on the indie scene before, and we had great matches. Storm was a great up-and-coming worker, but whoever was watching, they happened to be watching Storm and I's match, and it's still one of my favorite matches to this day. We got together and we just figured, you know, we got to go out and tear it up and, you know, make it one of the best matches we've ever had. And it got some attention. And I love the story that I tell when I got to the back. You know, of course I was I'd known Jeff from WCW, and I just looked at him for approval, and he winked at me. He said, "We're going to be in touch." It was within days they signed Storm and I to a contract.
Now, did you always get along with Storm? Like, were you excited to team with him? Were you like, "Oh, I got a team with this douchebag"? Like, were you always on the same page? At least at the beginning?
At the beginning, we got along great. Funny thing is, we actually rode to, it was in Huntsville, Alabama, was the first TNA show. And we worked together great. We got along great. I think we even hung out a few times, but we rode to Huntsville together. We stayed, we got a room together. So we stayed that night together, and then we got to the room, and that's when it became, I got a team with this douchebag. So yeah, being kind of road partners, we were fine, but you know, you got it in your head, you're going to become a single star. You know, I was like, this guy's a cowboy that shoots off guns in the ring. And, you know, I didn't think we'd fit well together, being a tag team.
Well, the audience begged to differ, because AMW became one of the faces of the early NWA TNA show. And really, you guys really hit it off as a tag team on screen. When did you realize, if ever, that you guys really had something as a tag team?
Well, we teamed a couple times, and then I think that's when we realized, you know, hey, this is our shot. This is our opportunity. And if they're going to put us in a tag team, then we're going to do our best to make this the best tag team that we can.
I remember, because I used to go as an extra jobber guy for explosion matches in the early days in Nashville. And I just remember, bro, you were probably, I mean, for the most part, one of the tallest guys in the locker room. You were freaking tanned out of your mind. You were jacked, long hair. You looked like what a pro wrestler should look like, that's a superstar. You know what I'm saying? You agree, Matt?
Oh, absolutely. And so much so that when AMW did get split up a little bit because James Storm had an injury, Chris got a couple shots at the title. He got a one-on-one shot against Jeff Jarrett, and then also he participated in a gauntlet for the gold. What was it like when the injury happened and you got your opportunity to kind of do a little singles run there?
Yeah, Storm had hurt his shoulder and was going to be out. And thank God, because we all know in wrestling, you know, you're part of a tag team. One guy gets hurt, and sometimes they don't do anything.
Screwed.
Yeah. And I think, you know, thank you for the compliments you just gave me. But I think that had a lot to do with them giving me that shot and that singles shot, because, you know, I think I looked the part. They decided to give me a singles run, and that gave me the confidence back that I needed, that if anything was to ever happen with the tag team, I always felt like I could get back into that singles run. And they pushed me hard as a singles guy. You know, Russo was behind that. And yeah, they gave me a couple shots at Jeff. And so, yeah, I mean, it felt great, man. I mean, I felt good to be in the singles run. And you know, I was glad they didn't just throw Storm away either. So it was a great time for me.
Some of the matches that people remember you for, of course, you guys had a great feud with the Disciples of the New Church with Slash and Brian Lee. But also, I think most people, early TNA, their memories are matches with you involved with Triple X. Can you talk a little bit about your feud with Triple X and the matches that AMW had with them?
Yeah, Triple X, it was Chris Daniels, Elix Skipper, and Low Key. And so they would I think people are going to remember mostly Daniels and Elix because we had the cage matches with them. But Low Key was involved in a lot of the matches. They were doing the whole Freebird thing that, you know, they would just pick two of the three and we'd have the matches. But we always had good matches with those guys. And the thing I liked about them is there was really no intense feud backing it. It was just it was four or five guys getting in there and just having great wrestling matches.
And eventually the time had to come, because we had two young bucks, two guys who definitely had a big future, and they did the turn, and they had James Storm, Cowboy James Storm, hit you with a beer bottle, which blinded you and created a big feud with James Storm. Was there a feeling about who was going to be the Michaels and who was going to be the Jannetty after you guys split?
Yeah, there was a lot of times that was brought up. And I guess, I don't know if it was because of the singles run that they gave me or what it was. I know even in promos, they would have me do a lot of the talking. And if we were ever brought out to do commentary with the commentators, I don't know. Sometimes I felt kind of bad for Storm, because they would put me on the headsets and have Storm sitting behind me. So yeah, that was actually brought up, and yeah, people had considered, you know, me the Michaels and he was going to be the Jannetty if it ever happened. And if he ever got down on that, I mean, I was the first one in his ear telling him that it would never be like that, that all he needed was the opportunity, and I knew he would prove everybody wrong. I knew that if and when that ever happened with splitness and a feud would ensue, whatever we did with each other would get some attention right there, which I think it did with the matches that Storm and I wound up having.
Hey, Robbie, there's no doubt in my mind that Chris Harris was treated as the bigger deal. He seemed like he'd be the breakout star. You seem to be a fan of that era. Was that your observation as well, that it looked like Chris Harris was kind of this can't-miss Shawn Michaels out of the tag team?
Yeah, I mean, when I watched back then, like I said, how, you know, I said I don't want to blow smoke up your butt. When I looked at you two, I mean, Storm's obviously awesome, but you were just, if you just look at you two, you were taller, you were in better shape. You know, it's just, it was kind of like wow, this guy looks like more of a star.
And a lot of us felt that way. I was a huge fan and still am a huge fan. What was the process then after you did a singles run? What was the process of you leaving TNA and joining the World Wrestling Entertainment?
Well, I guess it started with, I think Storm and I got everybody's attention, and then they kind of took me on a run there, and Storm had a great singles run. They took me from that, and they put me in that another King of the Mountain match, which is when Kurt first won the title, Kurt Angle, and then from there they took me on a run with Christian, which, you know, again, you can't get much better than that, and then once that was over, it just started to go downhill. I wasn't sure where we were going. I had had some talks with Russo, and Russo even admitted to me he wasn't sure where we were going with it. You know, I had kind of talked to him about, because I had had Kurt on so much, and even Kurt and I joked about this before, but he was on TV so much that in order to get some TV time, you had to be in a segment with him. And I made a joke about that. Well, then from then on, they started having me in segments with Kurt complaining about not being on TV enough.
I found that all my years in TNA, whenever someone new came in and they were the focus, they weren't just in one long segment. They were in every segment. I found that with a lot of guys over the years.
I never understood that, but you're right. I mean, they've done that with several people over the years. And Vince had talked about you going somewhere with that and maybe eventually putting me with Kurt. And it all sounded good. But the thing is, it had been so many months already. And, you know, I was frustrated that, you know, I was still happy to be there, but was just kind of wondering where we were going. Well, it just so happened my contract was coming up. And I had already been through this for my last couple contracts. You know, there had already been people contacting me from WWE. Every time Storm and I would talk about it, and we'd always, you know, turn it down. It's not like they made an offer, but they were definitely interested. And so we would just, we wanted to re-sign with TNA. And I remember that time it was up. I didn't really know what was going on. And of course they paint a pretty picture over on the other side. So I wound up getting an agent for the first time. I'd always had my own dealings in the past. I can't really say what my thinking was at the time. I just was trying to do what was best for me. And I'd always been somebody in my career that had taken chances. You know, some would work out and some wouldn't. And, again, I was just trying to look out for myself and see what was best. I know Storm had re-signed, and it was one of those things where, you know, they were messing around with the contracts at that time. Anyway, they were, Storm and I had been on a secure deal. What you would, I guess, call a salary. Like, they could use us so many times throughout the year, but we got paid X amount of dollars. And one of the biggest things with that had worked out was we were always bringing up a concern of if we got hurt, you know, then we don't get paid, which is kind of the norm in the wrestling business, or you get deducted. And this was kind of like a win-win for both. They could use us as much as they wanted, so they could overuse us if they wanted, but we still got a steady paycheck. And with this new contract coming up, Robbie, you probably know more about this than I do. They were starting to do the, you know, certain dates and certain percentages, and there was just so much going on with these new contracts that they were trying to switch everybody over to. And the way I factored it in, it was going to be a big pay cut. And I guess instead of going back and forth, you know, I looked at what I could get with WWE, and so the money was there, and I thought the opportunity might have been there, and I put in so many years with TNA, and I just thought, you know, maybe now's the time. And, you know, I took a chance. So I wound up signing with WWE.
And then it wasn't just you at the time, right? It was also Ron Killings, both of you at the same time.
Yeah, Ron and I left at the exact same time and got signed.
And you got signed to a World Wrestling Entertainment contract on January 29th, 2008. And from there, it gets a little bit hazy because you made your debut on March 11th in a dark match against Shelton Benjamin. But after that, it got sporadic. Can we talk about a little bit about when you first got there and got signed, what the expectations were and who signed you and what they told you about what the future was going to be for Chris Harris in World Wrestling Entertainment?
Well, they blew it up pretty good. I was talking to Johnny Ace, John Laurinaitis, and they brought me in. I did that dark match, and I'm not sure if they knew what they were doing. If they had any idea, I wound up having a meeting with the writers up in Stanford later on. They wanted to send me down to Tampa, where they at the time it turned into NXT, but this is way before NXT.
Well, wait, real quick though, not to cut you off, but you said they brought you in for a dark match. What was that, to TV?
Yeah, they brought me into TV for a dark match. I don't remember if it was probably Raw.
And then that was your first ever time in a WWE locker room?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was first time. Was everybody cool to you and everything being your first time there, like a TNA guy coming in?
You know, it's funny. I had known so many of the guys, I guess, just whether it's being on the road so long or you know, meeting them if they were in town or coming through TNA, you know, whatever the case was, I knew a lot of the guys. And, it's funny. I had talked to so many of them about, you know, if the opportunity ever came to come over, and that they were just all for it. Yeah, come on. And everything's great. And just shined it up really nice. And then I got there
and they act like they didn't know you.
it almost felt like that. I mean, they were nice at first, but it wasn't like, you know, and I don't know what I expected. I don't know if I expected, hey, we're going to all be buds and be road partners and, you know, everything was going to be cool. But I, even after seeing all these guys, I still felt like a loner. You know, I figured I'd be on my own for a little while, but then you start making buddies and, you know, maybe traveling with people. And, you know, it was like everybody had their own clique going on. And so I was just on my own for a while. You know, one guy that was really cool, I'll throw it out there. Jimmy Yang was from Cincinnati, and he was pretty cool. I hooked up with him a few times, and actually I'd known Matt and Jeff from TNA. So Matt was a big help at the time too. But here's here's something else that's interesting. I remember being in catering, and Hunter and Sean had came up to me, and I think it was Sean looked at Hunter. He said, "Is this the guy that everybody was talking about?" And Hunter's like, "Yeah." And so, you know, I talked to him for a few minutes, and they were like, "You know, if you need anything, let us know. You know, we're hoping for good things from you." And, you know, one of those kind of things. You know, I sat down, and when I thought, you know, hey, they came up to me, and, you know, and were talking to me like that. You know, and if you know these guys, which just working with them that short time is all I really know of them, but who knows if they were, you know, jerking me. You know, I don't know if they were doing that just to kind of test me out or what, but at the time I thought it was cool that they came up and, you know, before I even had a chance to go up to them and introduce myself, you know, they come up to me. So yeah, my first time in there, I felt like everything was, you know, on a good roll. And I felt like a loner, like you said, Robbie, but I did feel, you kind of expect that going in, but I felt okay at the time. I felt like something was going to happen. And, but yeah, like I said, they sent me down to Tampa, I guess, to get ready for whatever they had planned for me.
It seems to me that it was a second chance at your dream coming true. Your dream was to be in one of the big two. From 1994, you debuted. 2002, you're in TNA. And now, 6 years later, you have got your chance. What was it like for you to maybe get your dream to come true again?
Well, I felt like I was living it in TNA. And, you know, a lot of people might look at TNA as a starting point, but I was just looking at it like, I mean, I was excited. I felt like we were on top. I was there through all the steps that, you know, TNA had taken, whether it was the pay-per-views that started on Wednesday, and then they went to Fox Sports, and then we went to, when we started going down to Orlando for the paper, then we're doing the pay-per-views every month, you know, it was just, you know, and then getting the Spike TV. I felt like that was all such a progression that, you know, when you're looking at the big two, WCW and WWE, you know, TNA didn't exist at the time. So I kind of felt like, you know, TNA was an impact player at the time. But yeah, I mean, I had spent the time there. And so, you know, WWE just was the next step in Chris Harris's career. So, I was very excited about it. I was excited to be there, and I had high hopes, and I felt like we were going to do something.
And something happened between that January 29th signing and, of course, the dark match. And then July in 2008, you debuted as Braden Walker. What were you going through personally at the time? Because you didn't seem like the same wrestler in a lot of ways.
Well, funny you say that, because they didn't let me be the same wrestler I had been. And when I say same wrestler, it sounds like, you know, oh, the same old wrestler. Well, the same old wrestler is what got me to where I was. And, I'd been going to Tampa this whole time, and I felt like I was going through training all over again. You know, I was going in every day, and I was bumping my ass off, and, I'm trying not to complain about it, but, you know, I wanted to be on the road and, you know, be doing something instead of going through a training session.
And at this time, how many years were you in pro wrestling, period?
Well, since 94. So,
14 years in, you're going through the basics again, as if you're restarting. That's a mind fuck, you know?
Yeah. I can remember, at the time it was, Tom Pritchard and Steve Kern. And again, back to what I was saying about the guys I had known, I'd known Tom Pritchard for a while. And so when I went in there, you know, he said it was great to have me, and, you know, we're looking for good things and all this stuff. Within weeks, I'm told by Tom Pritchard I'm not taking a shoulder tackle right. Now picture that, Robbie. I've been in the business 14 years, and I got Tom Pritchard in the middle of the ring while there's about 20 guys watching, telling me that I'm not taking a shoulder tackle right. And, you know, I can get defensive and, you know, cause a scene if I want, I guess. But, you know, that's probably what they're looking for. They're testing you.
Sure. Yeah. The crazy thing about something simple like that is there might be someone's one way to teach it. But if you watch everyone, you know, on the TV level of wrestling, everyone takes things and makes them their own and does them their own way once you learn the basic way to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's different ways to go from a lockup to a headlock. You know, yeah. I mean, there's different ways to teach it and different ways to learn. And then you kind of put your own spin on it and make it your own thing. So yeah, it's just, and that's just kind of the way I was getting the feeling down there is that, you know, they were just, it was just a test down there. And then they would bring me to TV, for no reason. I mean, there were so many times I went to TV and I didn't do anything. But then they'd send me right back down to Tampa and I'd go through that again. So it was just it was a real frustrating time. And
you lived in Tampa? They had you living there?
No, I was still living in Cincinnati. I was flying down, and that's the thing. When I went to Tampa, they were bringing me in, of course, but, you know, I'd get my own rental car, drive around all week, and my own hotel I'd have all week, which I know that's part of being on the road, but when you're not making the extra money being on the road and you're spending money, that's just another frustrating thing. You know, no matter what you're getting paid, you're paying all this money out and not making the extra money on, cause that's how they would do it. Depending on your TV matches or, each time you were at the shows, you would get paid an extra amount. So,
yeah. So you were just training. So it was all just negative out of all the travel expenses.
Yeah. So I was taking all that. And then plus, you know, it does weigh on your mind a little bit, you know, which when you're doing the training, you're not being, you know, brought in to do anything. And, I'm not sure where the turn was. I don't know what, but they were finally going to, bring me in. And, which during this time I had, this is kind of important, but they had brought Ron Killings and I up to, Stanford. Well, they brought us one time to do the physical and the drug test. And then we went up another time where we had meetings with the writers, and I got brought into the boardroom that Ron and I did at separate times. But they gave us a tour of the WWE studios, and you know, they were treating us great. And I had a meeting. I must have been in that meeting for a couple hours, and they wanted to know my history and, you know, what I had done and some ideas that, you know, they were talking about doing. And I felt great coming. I can remember feeling good coming out of that meeting, thinking, okay, they, you know, I'm in the writers' heads. They can start kind of letting their minds spin a little bit and start throwing out some ideas. And, you know, that's how I thought it worked. You know, we all got together to get a basic line of something. And then they just kind of let their heads turn and you know, come up with something. So,
well, whether it was, it seems to me it was either they were messing with you, or maybe you had the mark of a TNA wrestler, or maybe they had no idea what they were going to do with you. It obviously probably took a toll on you physically, mentally, emotionally. By the time you made your debut in ECW under Braden Walker, how had you changed in a negative way?
Well, to be in this business, you have to have some thick skin. You got to be ready for that. And a lot of these people, they will, I hope I can say this, but they will mind fuck you. And I'd always, for the most part in the business, I'd always kept a good head on my shoulders. I felt like I had a great attitude. You know, I was willing to work with anybody, and, you know, and even, you know, coming in here, I never once brought up TNA. You know, I never came in like, you know, like, hey, I'm a TNA star, and nothing like that. I never brought up TNA. I never said anything bad about TNA either, but, I just felt like, you know, the ball was in their court. I was going to let them decide what they wanted to do, and I was going to make it work, just like I'd done before. And I can remember talking to Johnny about a few ideas. I actually talked to Dusty Rhodes about a few ideas, you know, where everybody seemed open to certain things. You know, it got to a point where, you know, that's when I, you know, kind of brought up a few things, but I brought them up to people like that. I never, you know, I was never going to any of the top guys, you know, telling them to do this or do that. Where they came up with this idea, I'm not sure. I know they were starting to bring in some new talent for the ECW show at the time. And, it's funny. I've heard so many stories about guys, that have gone in, and when the writers had come to them trying to come up with some new names, I've heard some horrific names, that people had gone through. And, when the day I was coming in as the Braden Walker, they had no idea what they were going to call me the day of the match. I mean, I'm going over my match, and they still didn't know what they were going to call me.
Well, what was the reason why you couldn't be Chris Harris?
I have no idea. And you guys were asking about, you know, how much of a toll it had taken on me. I mean, it really messed with my head, and I guess their plan worked. I feel like they were trying to get to me and trying to break me, and in a way they kind of did. And so by the time I got in there, I mean, I remember going over a few moves, and I had some of the other guys that were doing the same thing. You know, we were all, you know, everybody gathers around ringside and doing their own thing. And there was just so much of my arsenal that I was told not to do, for whatever reason. This guy was doing this, or this guy, his dad used to do that, so you can't do that. I mean, there was just so many. I was like, are you guys really serious? I mean, is it really like this? And so I, even for a finish, I couldn't do but the catatonic because, I can't remember his name now.
As soon as we remember it,
Umaga was doing it. He was doing that move. And so I had known him from TNA. So I went up to him, and talked to him, and I said, I just wanted, out of respect, I wanted to come and talk to you about this. This has been a finish I've been doing, and I'd, you know, like to do it. And he didn't use it for a finish. He kind of just used it in the middle of his matches. And he didn't even always use it, but I had seen him do it. So I felt like, out of respect, I should probably go say something to him. And, he never gave me a no, but he didn't seem like he was too, supportive of the whole thing. So I felt like, okay, it's probably best that I don't do it. So I think my first match, I ended with a crossbody off the top, which is not a bad move, but it's just so basic and simple that, you know, just, I have to admit, I mean, they got to me a little bit, and I was like, you know, I didn't know they were taking all my moves away. I couldn't be Chris Harris, not the name. I couldn't be the wrestler, Chris Harris.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. When they finally did come up to you that day with the name, how did you feel? What time was it? Like, right before you went out, or?
Oh, it was a couple hours probably before I went out.
What did that tell you? What did that tell you that you had already been there for so long? Shawn Michaels knew your name and knew who you were. You'd been down at developmental for months. You've been brought to TV many times and not used. You finally get your debut and they don't even have your fucking name. How did that make you feel about the investment they had in you?
It brought it to light. I mean, it kind of told me, and I think I'd already kind of seen it at that point with all the frustrations I had been going through for those months. But once I did get the call to come up and they were going to debut me, I thought, okay, you know, maybe here we go. Well, let's see what happens. But I went to add all that to it. They didn't even have a name, and there really wasn't a whole lot. There wasn't a real good debut to begin with. And I'm going to use Ron Killey as an example. And I love Ron. I always got along with Ron. So this is no shot on him whatsoever, but they brought us in at the same time. And during this time, they had sent a camera crew to his home in North Carolina and did some vignettes of him on the street and kind of where he came from. And this is before his character had ever come out. And but they were doing a background. They were doing a story with it to where once he debuts, mm-hmm. at least, you know who the guy is. You kind of care about, you know, okay. A lot of people were going to remember him anyway. But I felt like they at least did something with him, which is with me, they didn't even know my name until 2 hours before I went out, you know, and there was no background. They just kind of threw me out there.
It's so crazy that they even made the decision to say they wanted to debut you and put you on without having all that prepared. Like, do you think they did it all just hoping you would fail? Or do you think they wanted you to beat it through and win and succeed?
I think they test a lot of people, and a lot of people will beat it. But I think coming from TNA, I think they were looking to test me a little bit more than others. I'm not sure, man. I mean, the truth is, I really don't know. I can put the blame on them as much as I want. And I know a lot of people have put the blame on me saying I wasn't prepared or for whatever reason. But, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. I mean, you guys asked me how I felt about the company after all this. I mean, honestly, it was a $1 billion company that had no idea what they were doing. And I don't know if it went like that for everybody, but, you know, from the meetings I had, from them sending me to Tampa because they didn't know what to do. I mean, and then coming up with the name at the last time. And the thing is, I really didn't even care about the name. When I signed, I kind of knew that there was going to be no more Wildcat. I kind of figured that. So coming up with a new name, it wasn't a icebreaker. I mean, I figured I could make Braden Walker work. Sure. I had enough confidence that I felt like I could make that work. But yeah, it's just a nice piece of the story to know that they had no preparation whatsoever for it. And, you know, and they sent me out, and I think that I don't even remember the music. I know it was generic, and the name on the Titantron it just said Braden Walker. You know, there's no nothing. I don't know. You're just used to something. You're used to one thing, and they do something different, and, you know, and it just kind of throw me out there and just see what happens.
How was that? Like, after the match, how was it received? Were they happy with how it went down, or, you know, did they say it could have been better?
Or did they even care?
I don't think they cared. The match, I didn't even think the match was that great because I couldn't really do much of what I had, you know, made a name for myself to do. I think I did. I don't know if it was that match. It might have been my next match, but there was one match where I think I did probably 15 clotheslines because there wasn't a whole lot I could do. It was going downhill fast.
Well, and then what did you have? And then you had one more ECW match. Is that right?
Yeah, I had one more. And I think I was, the release came, within a week after that. I mean,
how did the second one go? Did it go same?
Yeah, it was the same.
Your finish in that match was you were going to clothesline him to death, right? Right.
I think that's what it was. But
how did Matt Coon become the funny guy of this podcast? I'm way too serious. This is
it's probably because you saw all this through my eyes somewhat, Robbie. Just, you know, I think you feel for me a little bit, but yeah. No, I had another match, and it was pretty much the same thing. We were looking for another finish because I couldn't do a bunch of moves, and yeah, there just was a bunch of clothes on. Then they kept bouncing the time around on me, which again is part of pro wrestling. You just got to adjust. But I remember before we were going out, we had a certain amount of time, and then before we went out, they cut the time. So okay, now we can adjust to that. Well, then we're in the middle of the ring getting ready to go home, and the referee tells us to don't go home yet. And so I was like, okay. And I remember going for the cover, and he said, don't you dare go home. And so we didn't. We kept going. So I threw in some more clotheslines. And the finish of that one, which is kind of funny because, well, it was funny to me at the time. But I remember, I will drop this name because I still can't stand him. But Jamie Noble was my agent for that match. And Jamie was a guy that I'd seen on the indies so many times, and him being a stooge up there, he just acted like he was king shit up there. And but he was the agent for the match, so I talked to him about it, and he was like, "Well, do this, do that, do this." And I was like, "I mean, I didn't say this, but I'm thinking, Jamie, I don't need you to map my match out. I mean, I can do it if you just let me do it my way." But we wound up doing the finish of that match was the perfect plex, which is the only thing I can, you know, I'd been tight with Kurt Henning in the past. So I thought, you know, well, why not? Why not do that? And I brought it up to him. I wasn't sure if anybody was doing it. I know his son had been in town, met his son in Tampa, but he hadn't come up yet. So I thought maybe the whole relative thing I could get away with, you know, and they could probably, I mean, you can read people, man. I think they could tell that I just wasn't happy. I mean, I wanted to get out of there so bad. I'd fallen into a depression, and there was days that it was at TV. This isn't something I would normally admit to people, but I mean, I would go hide, you know, just so I didn't have to talk to anybody, and you know, they wouldn't come find me or anything. I don't know. It was just a horrible time, man. And that's when I really started having some anxiety issues, and I was in a bad depression. And so by that match, I remember talking to Johnny afterwards, and I admitted to him. I said, it's just not me. I'm not myself. And I tried to put a positive spin on it, because I told him, I said, look, I'll keep trying to make it work. But as of right now, this just isn't me, and kind of left it at that.
Do you think you got pegged with having a shitty attitude?
I hope not. I'm probably making it sound like I did.
Well, I'm not saying you did, but I know how easy it is to get heat there. And it sounds like, you know, tell a wrestler, tell a Graham, it could get through like, oh, well, he was boo-boo facing about his shit. But is it possible that that's how you were perceived?
Anything's possible, man. I mean, it could have been, because you can read people, and anybody that knows me knows, especially when I'm around wrestling. I mean, I'm always have a positive attitude. I'm usually pretty happy. But I was just so depressed at the time and frustrated, and, that I'm sure that they probably could read that a little bit. And, I'm sure Johnny could, and I'm sure whatever Johnny's getting, it gets back to Vince, and I'm not sure, man. I didn't have the inside track at the time, but I mean, it could have gone so many different ways, and but yeah, I was really ready to get out of there.
I'm almost thinking they added that extra time in that second match year is almost as if like, well, he's got to fuck this up, and then we, you know, we have footage and we could use this against him, kind of thing, you know.
You could be right, man. I mean, I would believe anything at this point, because they just, that's how I've heard enough stories and I've been there. So they test people, they fuck with people. They just, it's kind of like what you said before. I mean, they try to make people fail just to see if you can pull through it. And, you know, maybe I wasn't strong enough to pull through it. I don't know.
It's not a fair situation, because in most places where you want to make some money with somebody, you want to figure out ways for them to succeed. You're not trying to see how quickly you can make them fail. It seems like a terrible professional atmosphere, and probably a bad atmosphere for you personally. Is that right?
It could be all the above, man. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they had really seen any of my, my history, then I would like to think that they would have thought they could do something. And not that I would be a top star, but I mean, you know, I don't care if it's mid card, you know, something that I felt like they would have done something. But
well, who's the person that reached out to you that, you know, really knew you from TNA that wanted to sign you to WWE? Like what happened to that person as far as letting everyone know how good you were?
I don't know if it was that contract signing, but the one before, it was Tommy Dreamer. He was actually in charge of,
So was he still there when you came to ECW?
He was there. He wasn't, I don't think he was in charge anymore of the talent. I don't even know what the name of the position would have been, but he's another one. And I still get along with Tommy, but he was one of the ones that seemed excited about bringing me in. And, you know, he was Johnny's right-hand man. So, but he was another one when I got there. You know, I just felt like, you know, I mean, Tommy was doing his own thing, and I was like, you know, kind of what happened to, you know, you telling me this was a good idea, and, you know, they're going to do something with me, and, you know, just things like that. But
and Tommy Dreamer's position in creative with WWE was a very short one. So the fact that he was one of your biggest boosters may have actually worked against you a little bit. In you made your debut in the WWE in January 2008. You were signed in January 2008. You made your dark match debut March 11th. Brain Walker debuted July 8th. And you were released from your contract on August 7th, 2008. Who told you and how did you feel? Was there a part of you that was happy or were you devastated?
You'll probably be shocked by the answer, but I guess I had done those two matches pretty close together. Braden Walker debuted in July and I was released in August, because I was released the week of my last match. I remember being home and my girl at the time was with me. I was at home. She was with me. Robbie, I think you know who I'm talking about.
I do.
And I remember I took a phone call from Johnny, and I went outside on my deck and took the call, and he said, "We're going to exercise our right to release." And I didn't ask why. I didn't ask if there's anything I could do to change it. It's just when he said that, I was like, okay. And he said, "That's not saying we can't do anything in the future." And he said, "You know, maybe I can help you get some tours of Japan or something like that." You know, he was trying to be positive, but you know, hell, by that point, Johnny's used to giving bad news. So he told me that. I'm pretty sure it was a short conversation, but I remember coming back into my house and she looked at me, and the first words out of her mouth was, she said, "That's the first time I've seen you smile in months."
You definitely did a little independent wrestling after that, and you returned to TNA briefly, but we just talked to the person who played Muhammad Hassan, Mark Capani, and he told us that his last match with The Undertaker in the WWE was his last match ever. And it seems to me that your experience as Braden Walker was your last match in a lot of ways, and that's really when it ended. Is that when the dream kind of died for you, when Braden Walker and Chris Harris was let go from WWE?
I think a big part of it was, yeah. I think, I was happy to be out of there, but of course it was a huge letdown that it turned out like that. And I don't even think I did indies for a while. I was just so broken down, man. They had just kind of taken the passion I had of wrestling away from me. I didn't think I was good for anything. Even if I had tried to do TNA at the time, which I'm not even sure if they would have had me back, but I don't even think I'd have been good for them. My head just wasn't right. And I just had lost the love and the passion for the business. So I remember taking some time off, and then I just kind of dabbled in some indies for a little bit. But I don't want to say I've never gotten back to it, because you know, it's been a long time, and I've just tried to put that out of my head. It took a while. It may have taken a good couple years to just get the whole stigma off of Braden Walker. I remember I did some conventions, so I wasn't even wrestling, but I could still, you know, get out there and do some conventions. And you know, I would kind of get frowned upon, because you know, some people would ask me to sign Braden Walker, but then I finally accepted the fact that, you know, hey, there's going to be WWE fans out there that aren't TNA fans, so they may not have even heard of me. But they knew Braden Walker, so they wanted me to sign an autograph Braden Walker. So, you know, it took some time, but I think I finally got over it. But no, what you say, there's probably a big part of that, that, you know, there was a part of me that was lost at that time.
And we always talk about on this show why it ended, and I think we can see a lot of ways why it ended. I think you were set up to fail in a lot of ways. But once again, talking to Mark Capani last week, he took a lot of personal responsibility, a lot of ownership in the situation. Just asking you, even though a lot of it seemed out of your control, how much personal responsibility, how much ownership do you have over the Chris Harris to Braden Walker to out of WWE experience?
Well, I mean, I have to take some responsibility. I think there's more from the outside looking in. I think it's easier for people to point more fingers at me, because they don't know the inner workings of WWE. But I saw how it worked. So I feel like, you know, that there was a lot they could have done. There was a lot that they did do to hold me down. But there's, like I said before, there's guys that, you know, break through that and become huge stars. So, you know, that wasn't the path that was there for me. Wasn't the path that, I guess I, you know, could have fought harder for, but, I have to take some responsibility for it, 'cause they tried to break me and they did. So, you know, who's to say what would have happened? You know, that different circumstances could have had different results, but, you know, that's the way it happened, man. And, you know, I'm good now. I mean, I've gotten that off my back. I was going to say, I don't regret going, because there's a part of me that, you know, you always have to take these kind of chances in life and in your professional career. And I would have never known. I mean, I would have gone all these years not knowing what would have happened. I do know now. I took that chance. You know, if I ever talk about regrets in my career, you know, that would be idiotic for me to say that, you know, yeah, I don't regret going. Yeah, if I had to do over, I probably wouldn't have. But I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known any of that. So, yeah, I wish I could have made something work with TNA, but it didn't work out like that. And you know, and there you go. I mean, that's the way it turned out.
Well, the Chris Hare story is a fascinating one, and it's definitely not over, because we're sitting here talking to you now. And what is Chris Harris doing right now? What is, you're definitely in a post-wrestling life in a lot of ways. What is your life like today?
Well, I still do some indie work. I do mostly local, indie stuff, just, helping out the new guys and the young guys. And, you know, I'm still actually respected around here. so they'll listen to me a little bit. And, once in a while I'll do a match. And as Robbie knows from him being on the indies with him, he, you know, if I get a decent show or something, I'll still get out there and do something, you know, make a few bucks. But that's really it. I was doing some conventions for a while. You know, I'm still open to doing those too. But that's really all it consists of. I'm dealing a lot with, some injuries and some health issues, things like that, that would probably prevent me from ever doing wrestling full time again. Which is probably why I haven't pushed it too much, but you know, that's kind of how it goes. I mean, I don't ever want to say the word retire, because every time you say it, you know, you wind up back involved at some point. So I would just like to, you know, keep doing what I'm doing, and, you know, enjoy the indie scene and enjoy the you know, the younger talent and trying to help them grow. And I love seeing, you know, some of the guys at the WWE now, you know, mm-hmm. like Bobby Roode, I traveled with him for years. So it's great to see him like that. And then AJ and Joe and, you know, those guys, it's great to see them having so much success. So, you know, and I still keep in touch with Storm. He's kind of taking his time now, and, he's not on a full-time schedule, so he's doing his indie. I know he's staying real busy. So, you know, it's just kind of the way it is right now, man. I mean, I'm never closed off. I mean, I can't close myself off to wrestling till I'm not here anymore. So, so I'm always, you know, I'm always open to doing something, but, you know, that's just kind of where it stands right now. And, you know, I'm happy with it.
Were you affected at all by the online critics?
Well, this kind of ties into what I was saying before. I mean, that most of the online critics probably looked at it, you know, from against me mostly, like where it was all my doing and it was my fault, and, you know, everything that happened was, you know, because of something that I did. You know, and, you know, I don't know if they took into consideration everything, you know, especially some of the stuff I talk about, but everybody's going to have their opinion, man. I mean, I didn't. No, I try not to let it bother me. It may have at the time. I kind of, like I said, I try to put it out of my head, but it may have bothered me at the time, because I felt like the people really didn't know the whole story. But no, I try, as Robbie probably knows by now, I don't dab a lot with technology, so I don't really listen to a whole lot of it.
Well, just so everyone knows, we had to take about 10 minutes to teach Chris to download Skype.
You know, Chris, don't feel bad. It took Robbie 2 weeks to figure out he had to screw his microphone stand in.
That's true.
And now you're an expert, man.
Yeah, not really.
So, Chris, if people want to get a hold of you and want to book you and see what you're up to, how can they get a hold of you? How can they reach you online?
The best way is through my Twitter, which is at AMW Wildcat. But I also have one that it's a Gmail. It's AMW Wildcat Bookings at Gmail.
And if you want to get a hold of Chris Harris, please do. We all remember Chris with AMW, and I think you can really hang your hat on those great matches that you had there. Robbie, I know this was an important show to you because this is a longtime friend of yours. What do you have to tell your good friend Chris about his experiences?
No, awesome, man. I just, you know, again, this was still a learning experience for me. I learned a lot about you today, and it was great hearing your story again, even though some of the stuff I knew already, and I appreciate you doing it, man. And I think a lot of people are going to be hitting you up for bookings after this.
Thank you for joining us very much, Chris Wildcat Harris, not Braden Walker, one of our favorite wrestlers on Why It Ended. Wildcat Chris Harris reunites with Cowboy James Storm as AMW in a tag team match Saturday, April 7th at the Malabar Gymnasium in Mansfield, Ohio. Go to www.aswalive.com. And don't forget to book this man, Robbie E. You can find him at robbie-e.com. And if you like the show, make sure to check out our brand new YouTube channel. Go to YouTube, look up Why It Ended. You'll find our full archives, as well as clips from this episode that are not on this episode. They're YouTube exclusive. Go to our YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and search Why It Ended. Robbie, like I said last week, I don't know how we'll top it. And that was, to me, a very emotional interview with Wildcat Chris Harris. What did you think about the interview we just had?
See, this is why I love this show. And I know I said it the past 2 weeks about being a fan, but I did not want that interview to end. Like, I it's hard for me. I'm very like an antsy person where I only like listening to myself talk. But these past 3 weeks, I've loved listening to these guys' stories. Literally, I was like hanging on every word that he said. That was... I'm just glad that how it all went down like that, but yet he still seems like he said he used the word positive, and he still seems that he's in such a good place because, you know what, man, he's a really good dude. So I'm just glad that however he got there, I'm glad that he's happy now.
And make sure, guys, to interact with our man Chris Harris on Twitter. And
yeah, hook him up. Give him a follow.
Definitely give him a follow. And not only that, let him know what his career meant to you and that what he did actually mattered, because it really did. And he was a great wrestler. You can follow him at AMW Wildcat. And please keep letting us know that you like a different type of podcast. And we are at Why It Ended on Twitter. I'm at Matt Coon Music. And Robbie, how can people get a hold of you on Twitter? And also if they want to book you.
Twitter, at Robbie E. Impact, Instagram, Real Robbie E. And then, of course, to book me, robbieebookings@gmail.com.
And as I said last week, I'm going to say every week, book this man, Robbie E. He is in the prime of his career, and we are in the prime of our career here on Why It Ended.